Hello, I'm Dr. Javed Butler. I'm a cardiologist and a clinical trialist with Baylor Scott & White Health in Dallas, Texas, in the United States. And I'm delighted to go over the results of the EMPACT-MI trial, which was presented in the American College of Cardiology annual meeting in Atlanta just this week. So why did we test the use of empagliflozin in patients with post-acute myocardial infarction? Several things. One, patients with myocardial infarction over the last two or three decades, we have made major advances in terms of improvement of outcomes and reduction in the risk of recurrent myocardial infarction. Angioplasty, stents, antiplatelet therapy, lipid therapy, systems of care, early intervention, all of those things have led to substantial improvement in outcomes. However, while the recurrent myocardial infarction risk has gone down, the risk of heart failure still persists, which is one of the feared complications of myocardial infarction. On the other hand, SGLT2 inhibitors, which were originally designed for the management of patients with type 2 diabetes, subsequently were found to have a pharmacodynamic profile that clearly showed that while these drugs are very good antidiabetic agents, they are actually very good cardiovascular risk-modifying agents, considering their effect on the heart, on the kidney, on the vasculature, and systemic effects like inflammation, oxidative stress, and adiposity. On the basis of that, we already know that these drugs reduce the risk of heart failure events in high-risk states like type 2 diabetes, like chronic kidney disease, and also in patients who already have heart failure, irrespective of ejection fraction or diabetes. On the basis of that, it made perfect sense that for patients at risk of heart failure, if these drugs were to be given in an acute myocardial infarction setting, perhaps they will reduce the risk of heart failure as well. So that was the background on the basis of which the EMPACT-MI trial was designed. Now, the trial was patients with STEMI or non-STEMI within the first 14 days of myocardial infarction. They were randomized to empagliflozin 10 milligrams or placebo on top of the standard of care. This was a global trial. 22 countries were involved in the clinical trial. 6,522 patients were enrolled in the trial. The patients needed to have one of the two characteristics besides having STEMI or non-STEMI. One is that either they needed to have congestion requiring some treatment. Any ejection fraction could be totally normal, could be 60%, 70%, but congestion in the face of acute myocardial infarction or a new drop in ejection fraction to less than 45%, one or the other. Now, patients who already have a history of heart failure at the time of diagnosis of MI, they were excluded because obviously they already have an indication for an SGLT2 inhibitor. So patients with eGFR less than 20, those with type 1 diabetes, and those with history of heart failure were excluded. Otherwise, diabetes, no diabetes, STEMI, non-STEMI, doesn't matter. As far as you have either congestion or a new drop in EF, and within 14 days of MI, they were included in the study. The patient population, about 75% were men, 30-some percent were with diabetes, about 13% had previous myocardial infarction, about 57% of the patient had congestion, and 78% of the patients had new drop in EF. About 35% had both of these features. Now, what's interesting to note is that in real-world registries, we see that almost 70-75% of the patients have non-STEMI. But in clinical trials, we see the opposite, that more patients are enrolled who have STEMI, and we had about 75% of the patients who had STEMI in the trial. These patients were excellently treated at baseline. They were 90, close to 90% of the patients were revascularized. 90+% of the patients were on 95+% of the patients were on statin and antiplatelet therapy, and 80+% of the patients were on RAS inhibitors or beta blockers, and about 50% of the patients were on MRA. So excellent background therapy on the top of which SGLT2 inhibitors were tried. Now, one thing to note is that this was a pragmatic trial. You know, there's a lot of interest in reducing the burden on the sites and on the investigators and on the patients. So as part of that, we did not have, except for one, any inpatient follow-up. This was all pragmatic follow-up of the patient remotely on virtual and phone and all that kind of stuff. No during trial physical exams or blood tests or anything like that. The inclusion exclusion criteria were you know, available in routine care, streamlined data collection. But what is very relevant to the results discussion is that we did not have central adjudication committee. In other words, the results were adjudicated. In other words, whether somebody had an MI or somebody had heart failure or somebody had died, they were all done by the local side based on a standardized form. There's plenty of literature that suggests that, of course, unfortunately, if a patient dies, then the patient dies. But there is not, there are sometimes differences between central adjudication versus site for cause of death. And similarly, hospitalizations for heart failure, there's a generally a very good consensus. But for outpatient heart failure events, there is not as good a consensus of a central committee versus site-based adjudication. So on the basis of this, the primary endpoint was driven by all-cause mortality and only heart failure hospitalization. We did not include outpatient heart failure. So that already by design, we excluded a bunch of outpatient heart failure events because we were only focusing on in-hospital heart failure. But then, unfortunately, nobody could have predicted, but the first couple of years of the trial was solidly during COVID. And we know that during the COVID pandemic, the heart failure hospitalizations went down and patients were being treated in the outpatient setting. And then unfortunately, two regions that were very active in the trial ended up with global wars as well, Russia, Ukraine, and Israel. So all of that sort of makes us wonder whether we underappreciated the heart failure because we did not include in the primary endpoint. So with that background, the primary endpoint of all-cause mortality or hospitalization for heart failure, there was a 10% relative risk reduction that did not reach statistical significance. The p-value was 0.21. Hazard ratio was 0.90. But if we look at the components of the primary endpoint, there was no impact on mortality, but heart failure hospitalizations were reduced by 23% relative risk reduction. And if you look at total heart failure hospitalization, it was 23% relative risk reduction. And then, although not part of the primary endpoint, if we look at the outpatient heart failure, then there was 37% relative risk reduction. Safety was excellent, no difference between placebo or the treatment arm in terms of the safety. So in summary, the trial, while it did not achieve its primary endpoint because there was no mortality benefit, consistent with what we found in diabetes, in CKD, in heart failure, in these post-MI patients, there was about a 25 to 30% relative risk reduction in first and recurrent heart failure events. And if that signal got further accentuated, if we include the outpatient heart failure events, no safety concerns were seen. And this goes with the totality of evidence that SGLT2 inhibitors reduce the risk of development of heart failure in these post-MI patients. All of these data, the primary result has already been published in New England Journal, but all of these nuances of secondary endpoints have also been published already in Circulation and in Journal of American College of Cardiology. So hopefully these data will impact our practice patterns and that you would find some time to read these papers for further details. Thank you very much.